Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Morning Lineup Podcast. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. Today, we're talking Manager of the Year. The awards were announced by the Baseball Writers Association of America on Tuesday night. And Richard Justice and Allison Footer of MLB.com joined me here today. And no surprise, they went to surprise teams, surprise managers, or surprise squads. Torrey Lovello of the D-backs in the National League, Paul Molitor of the Twins in the American League. Foot, Richard, that's usually how this thing goes, right? It's usually the teams that exceed expectations, whoever decided those expectations are in place, it's usually a personal interpretation of how good a team was supposed to be versus, you know, how it performed. It's very rare for this award to go to a team that was like supposed to be really good and turned out to be really good. It's generally goes to the skippers of some surprise squads.
It's exactly what you said, Anthony. Like, it's not... you really can't base it on anything except they weren't supposed to be that good. And the reason I say that is because it's like you can scrutinize a player for whether or not he's the MVP. You don't need to actually be watching him every day or talking to him every day to really like get the body of work and understand what he meant, what his season meant, what he meant to his team. I mean, when you're talking about a manager, any beat writer will probably agree that the only manager that they can really critique properly is probably the manager that they're covering. Beat writers do not pay that much attention to other managers. And it would be impossible for me to say, like, you know, Dave Roberts for sure, you know, made the difference in a handful of wins. And I can think about the top of my head that he, you know, he did this particular thing and he, you know, it's so silly. So while I understand it's a meaningful award and it's something that's important to our game, I just don't feel like there's no way to really gauge it unless you're just looking at a team that probably wasn't supposed to be as good as it was. And that's kind of what we saw from the two managers of the year this year. Richard?
Yeah, and I would say this, though, and that's true. It's based on expectations. If you're supposed to win, you're probably not going to be the manager of the year. And we've seen some great managers, you know, never win the award or win it just one time. Having said all that, what Paul Molitor did this year was pretty amazing. That when you go back to the fact that on opening day, this guy was the lamest of lame ducks. His club was in transition. He was working for people that did not hire him. He was in the final year of his contract. He leads them to a surprising start. Chris Giménez pitches more than some of his relievers in games. They use 31 pitchers, and then they blow it up. They trade away his closer. They trade away a starting pitcher at the trade deadline. His players were ticked off. He called a meeting. And basically, they just opened the door to these young guys, Rosario and Buxton and Polanco. And then they went 20-11 in August and made the playoffs. I mean, a 26-game improvement. You know, when you think about it, we didn't even know if Paul Molitor, you know, he was a rookie manager at 58 and a lame duck manager at 60. Who was this guy? And I would think that this trophy to him means probably more than it means to anybody. And that's taking nothing away from the job Torrey Lovello did with the Diamondbacks or even Dave Roberts in leading the Dodgers.
Yeah, Paul Molitor is just the second Hall of Fame player to go on to win the Manager of the Year award, joining Frank Robinson. And as you mentioned, Richard, a huge turnaround, which is kind of the recipe for the Manager of the Year. He goes from 59 wins in 2016 to 85 wins and a wild card spot for the Twins in 2017. Worst record in baseball to the playoffs. No team had ever won 100 games or more and reached the postseason the next year. Of course, that's, you know, that the second wild card helps in that regard. It's only been around since 2012, but it was still a remarkable turnaround for the Twins. And Paul Molitor talked about how this Twins team was able to turn it around in 2017.
You know, you lose 103 games, and it's humbling, whether you're a player, a coach, or a manager. And, you know, I had to do a lot of self-evaluation on things that I thought I could have done better throughout the 16 season. I definitely knew what I felt we had to get better at to improve. You know, the big difference was in 16, a lot of young guys, we got off to a horrible start. And, you know, the mental fragility of young players, we just couldn't recover. This year was the opposite.
So obviously a fun year in Minnesota, unexpectedly fun year in Minnesota. And you saw genuine emotion from Paul Molitor when he was receiving this award. And he said it's an organizational honor, of course, and all managers say that. But obviously it took a lot of work to get the Twins off the ground in 2017 after the struggles a year earlier. And Foot, I think really one of the strongest things about Molitor in 2017 was just development of young players. I mean, that's what they needed to happen if this team was going to go anywhere.
know, he's real patient with Byron Buxton early in the year when Buxton's really struggling offensively. And lo and behold, you know, Buxton really took off in the second half, and just such a fun player to watch now on both sides of the ball. And then Jorge Polanco at shortstop, Miguel Sano, of course, is a real beast over there at third base. But, you know, that's what it was going to take if the Twins are going to be relevant in 2017. And Mulder, that turned out to be a real strength for him.
Yeah, I have to I do want to give credit to Mulder with everything that I said, that it's hard to gauge really how good a manager is if you're not covering him every day. I do want to say that, you know, I looked at the Twins like halfway through the season, and of course, being on the Astros side, they just demolished that bullpen to the point where I was actually concerned that the bullpen was not going to be able to recover from just that thrashing that happened around June. And really, I also looked at the rotation, and I remember looking at Bartolo Colon in the rotation and saying, you know, this is why the Twins are not quite ready to be competitive. Like a competitive team, a playoff caliber team, does not need a Bartolo Colon. They don't keep a Bartolo Colon in the rotation. They have better guys. So, yeah, I mean, you have to credit. That's when you really have to look at the coaching staff and the manager and see how they're able to maintain everything and be able to get these guys going over the course of a 6-month season. So, yes, I mean, I was in Minnesota, in Minneapolis briefly in September, kind of just, and I was able to sort of gauge just a little bit on what they had going on at that point. They've got a great mix of guys that are still young enough to not be old, but are veteran players, and then some tremendous young talent. Of course, Byron Buxton, to me, is a difference maker. And the way that he was able to break through, have a breakthrough season in a season that, like, had he not done that, I mean, would they have been in that position? It's there's an argument to be made that they would never have gotten that far unless he had gotten it together. So I just see this team on an upswing. I mean, some people disagree with me because it is a little bit of a weaker starting staff. But yeah, I really like what they've been doing.
Yeah, and I think they did exactly what they hoped to do in 2018. If you'd asked the new baseball ops guys, Derek Falvey and Thad Levine, they identified a core young guys that could play. I mean, going forward, they have to think that when Sano gets healthy, that Buxton finally may be the player we all thought he would be, Rosario and all those guys you mentioned. But, you know, they're going to go out and try to get as much pitching as possible. They've got the two young guys, Berrios and Mejia. Just get as much pitching as you can. And next year, some of those guys, young guys, may take a step back and all those things. But when you look at it in the context of the division, you know, Kansas City's in transition. Detroit's in transition. And the White Sox are doing sort of the same thing, just bringing as many young guys as they can. So who knows? You know, if we'd had this discussion a year ago, and we just said, you know, the Twins, the Diamondbacks, and Rockies are all going to make the postseason next year, we'd say, no, you're crazy. I just think they fit into the new landscape of baseball that you've got a chance. And with their core, I mean, they're an exciting team to watch.
So obviously a fun year in Minnesota, unexpectedly fun year in Minnesota. And you saw genuine emotion from Paul Molitor when he was receiving this award. And he said it's an organizational honor, of course, and all managers say that. But obviously it took a lot of work to get the Twins off the ground in 2017 after the struggles a year earlier. And Foote, I think really one of the strongest things about Molitor in 2017 was just development of young players. I mean, that's what they needed to happen if this team was going to go anywhere. You know, he's real patient with Byron Buxton early in the year when Buxton's really struggling offensively. And lo and behold, you know, Buxton really took off in the second half, and just such a fun player to watch now on both sides of the ball. And then Jorge Polanco at shortstop, Miguel Sano, of course, is a real beast over there at third base. But you know, that's what it was going to take if the Twins are going to be relevant in 2017. And Mulder, that turned out to be a real strength for him.
Yeah, I have to I do want to give credit to Mulder with everything that I said, that it's hard to gauge really how good a manager is if you're not covering him every day. I do want to say that, you know, I looked at the Twins like halfway through the season, and of course, being on the Astros side, they just demolished that bullpen to the point where I was actually concerned that the bullpen was not going to be able to recover from just that thrashing that happened around June. And really, I also looked at the rotation, and I remember looking at Bartolo Colon in the rotation and saying, you know, this is why the Twins are not quite ready to be competitive. Like a competitive team, a playoff caliber team, does not need a Bartolo Colon. They don't keep a Bartolo Colon in the rotation. They have better guys. So, yeah, I mean, you have to credit. That's when you really have to look at the coaching staff and the manager and see how they're able to maintain everything and be able to get these guys going over the course of a 6-month season. So, yes, I mean, I was in Minnesota, in Minneapolis briefly in September, kind of just, and I was able to sort of gauge just a little bit on what they had going on at that point. They've got a great mix of guys that are still young enough to not be old but are veteran players, and then some tremendous young talent. Of course, Byron Buxton to me is a difference maker, and the way that he was able to break through, have a breakthrough season in a season that, like, had he not done that, I mean, would they have been in that position? It's there's an argument to be made that they would never have gotten that far unless he had gotten it together. So I just see this team on an upswing. I mean, some people disagree with me because it is a little bit of a weaker starting staff, but yeah, I really like what they've been doing.
Well, they're going to be fascinating this offseason because they certainly seemed ahead of schedule in a lot of ways in 2017. And to piece it together with that pitching staff the way they did, I mean, they traded their best reliever, Brandon Kinsler, at the trade deadline, and then really took off. It wasn't anything Kinsler did wrong, but it was just so strange, to see a team make a run like that after the fact. And, Richard mentioned earlier, Chris Giménez pitching 6 times as a position player. Now, that just spoke to kind of, it was a strange start to the season for the Twins. You know, the desperation they had in their bullpen, and they were winning games, but then when they would lose games, they would absolutely get blown out and be in the position where you have to bring in a position player. So certainly a strange season. And Richard, I think it just begs the question, you know, where do they go from here? How do they maintain the momentum from 2017 and get even better? Obviously, they got a juggernaut in their division in the Cleveland Indians, and it's going to be a tough team to catch. But it seems like, reading the tea leaves, it seems like this could be one of those teams that maybe surprises some people in terms of how aggressive it is this offseason and looking to get better on that pitching staff.
Yeah, and I think they did exactly what they hoped to do in 2018. If you'd asked the new baseball ops guys, Derek Falvey and Thad Levine, they identified a core young guys that could play. I mean, going forward, they have to think that when Sano gets healthy, that Buxton finally may be the player we all thought he would be, Rosario and all those guys you mentioned. But, you know, they're going to go out and try to get as much pitching as possible. They've got the two young guys, Berrios and Mejia. Just get as much pitching as you can. And next year, some of those guys, young guys, may take a step back and all those things. But when you look at it in the context of the division, you know, Kansas City's in transition, Detroit's in transition, and the White Sox are doing sort of the same thing, just bringing as many young guys as they can. So who knows? You know, if we'd had this discussion a year ago, and we just said, you know, the Twins, the Diamondbacks, and Rockies are all going to make the postseason next year, we'd say, no, you're crazy. I just think they fit into the new landscape of baseball that you've got a chance. And with their core, I mean, they're an exciting team to watch.
Yeah, I really think they're going to be interesting this winter. I would not be shocked if they really extended themselves from a financial perspective and maybe brought in some pitching help that you might not expect. We'll see how aggressive they get. But you know, a couple years ago, the Diamondbacks got extremely aggressive for Zach Greinke, and then were a tremendous disappointment in 2016. They lost 93 games that year. Lo and behold, they win 93 games in 2017. So Torrey Lavelle was, of course, a big part of that, you know, kind of changed the culture of that clubhouse. They got some key contributions from some unexpected sources. You look at the year Robbie Ray had in rotation, Archie Bradley in the bullpen. But, you know, Foote, this was just one of the great surprises in 2017, the D-backs returned to relevance.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we were expecting it to happen as quickly as it did, but I do remember them having such high expectations starting in 2016 with Greinke joining the team. And then literally from the first game, it was such a dud. They had some key injuries, and of course, A.J. Pollock got hurt right before the season started. They felt like they were, you know, deep enough to kind of get through that, but it just everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And I sort of, when they went into the 2017 season, I sort of felt like, this could be the team that they thought they were going to have last year. And it's not like it was such a drastically different team when it came to the actual names on the roster, but things just kind of came together. So they were always, I just felt like, I'm still trying to figure out what happened in 16. So 17 actually did not like shock me, but them being maybe quite that powerful, that was probably a little bit of a surprise. But when they went and got JD Martinez, I mean, that just kind of, you know, it was like the one thing that they needed and that brought everything together, and they were off and running. I picked them to beat the Dodgers in the division series, stupid me. But I just feel like they have such a powerful team and they're set up to be good for a while.
Yeah, and I think they did everything. I mean, they, with they're going forward. We all on opening day, we knew their offense would be good. We pretty much agreed on that. But Corbin did what he had, you know, we penciled him in for a while. Robbie Ray, Tywan Walker, Zach Godley. They have identified a core of young starters. Archie Bradley became a star out of the bullpen. Now, he may still want to start, and there may have to be some tough conversations about that. But I don't think they're that far away. Are they the Dodgers? You know, the Dodgers have more resources and all that. But they're ahead of everybody else, and now they go into a season knowing, A, we can do it. B, we have done it, and we have a chance to even get better.
Well, after he won the Manager of the Year, Torrey Lovello talked about the goal of raising the bar again in 2018.
We're all players and things happen. You look to get better each and every day. And that doesn't change now that I'm a staff member. So it's the same mentality. It's all I've known that, you know, I'm going to look at everything that I could possibly do that maybe didn't go right this past year that I don't want to have go wrong again this year. So that would be where I'll start. And I think that's just human nature. And then examine the things that went well and just try to really get to the idea of raising the expectations and raising the bar a little bit higher, because that's what we need to do here in Arizona. We had a tremendous year. We're very, very proud of that. But I think there's still a little bit of hurt from how the season ended. And I know these guys are feeling it. Some of the conversations I'm having with them, I think we're all eager to see what we can do in the future years.
Lovello became the seventh skipper overall and the fourth year in a row that this award went to someone who's in his first full season as a major league manager. So a great job by him as sort of a freshman manager, if you will. But yeah, there's going to be now more expectations heaped upon this club in 2018. You guys, you know, made some great points about, you know, some of the young talent and the hopes of, you know, sustaining this in 2018. But of course, the big piece is JD Martinez hitting free agency, who was so huge for this club down the stretch. So Richard, that'll be, you know, the maybe a big X factor for them this winter is if they lose JD Martinez, how do they replace that production?
Yeah, you know, he was unbelievable for them with an OPS over 1,000. What did he hit? He had 29 homers in 62 games. Just unbelievable. Now, they've shown they will spend money, but I think they've also learned their lesson that they have to devote most of their resources to pitching, because that the way that ballpark plays, you've got to have some confidence in your pitching staff. I don't know how they replace that production. I don't think they're going to re-sign him. I think the money is going to get outrageous with him. I hope it does, because he's a good guy and he's had a long road to get to this point, but we'll see. You know, I just think even without him, you know, if they get a full season out of Pollock and Peralta and those guys, they're going to score enough runs.
Foot, how about the dynamics of this division when you look at the managers? Now, this is 2 years in a row from the National League West. Dave Roberts won it last year in his first year. You got Bruce Bochy, of course, you know, the very heralded skipper of the San Francisco Giants, had a rough year this year, of course, but very decorated in that particular dugout. Bud Black was a finalist this year in his first year in Colorado. He was a finalist for this Manager of the Year award. And I got to say, Andy Green, I mean, I don't think he got any votes in this thing, but you look at the Padres this year, won 71 games, and that felt like 101 for that particular club. They're, if you go by run differential, the Baseball Reference Pythagorean one loss expectancy had them for 59 wins. They win 71. Probably didn't help their draft position much in a year where that was probably the number one goal, but I thought Andy Green did a great job. So overall, Foot, it's a pretty strong group of managers in the NL West.
Absolutely. And I gave a little bit more credit to teams like the Diamondbacks, really, and the Rockies, because of the level of competition that they had to play in within their own division. And like you mentioned, I think it's Andy Green. I think he signed a contract extension just before they were having this like 21 game stretch of games against the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. Like, they wanted to make sure that like they were kind of on a happy note, and they wanted to show their fan base and everybody that they were committed to Andy Green before things possibly were going to go south. I think it was in September, maybe August, but I do like what he did a lot, and I just find that to be an extremely strong division. And that's why I felt like the Diamondbacks might have – I think that's why it bothered me that those two teams, the Diamondbacks and the Rockies, were playing for the wild card, because I just felt like the Diamondbacks had done more than some of the other teams that had actually just like won their divisions without any competition, like the Washington Nationals. So it just really bothered me that the Diamondbacks had to like climb that uphill when I felt like they were a team that was worthy, that was good enough to actually win a division. So yeah, just a tremendous, tremendous managing pool and tremendous division.
How about a word on the guys who did not win this award in 2017? First of all, you had three teams win north of 100 games this year, And none of their managers, of course, win the manager of the year. Dave Roberts and Terry Francona were fighting the uphill battle, which is winning the award in back-to-back years. That hardly ever happens. It happened to Bobby Cox in 2004 and 05. That's the last time. It might be the last time ever, the way this award is typically voted on. And then, I mean, you guys are in Houston, so you, of course, are well familiar with the work of A.J. Hinch on a day-to-day basis and the great job he does there. It seems like the Astros were hurt by just the expectation level, which was really high for Houston, even coming off of a downer of a year in 2016 where they didn't, you know, feed off momentum of 2015. He kind of got penalized for being as good as expected, I guess. But that kind of speaks to the bigger picture. I mean, if you're voting on manager of the year after the postseason, it's pretty clear who's the manager of the year. It's A.J. Hinch, right? And he did it. He pieced it together with, like, no bullpen left. They're running on fumes in the bullpen. He's got, you know, you and I finished off a couple games for them, Richard, in the World Series, just out of necessity, if you remember that. But, you know, I guess it would be kind of this might be a word that lends itself maybe better to doing after the postseason, but then it would be like a no-brainer, right? You just go to the two pennant winners, and that would be it.
Yeah, you know, but let me just say this about Terry Francona. This is, to me, the highest compliment you can give a manager, that you got a guy that went to Game 7 of the World Series, and the next year he finishes – he finishes second in the manager of the year voting. He had a 22-game win streak. They won 102 games. I mean, Terry Francona has become one of the gold standards in this business. And A.J. Hinch was just caught betwixt and between, you know, between what the Indians surge at the end of the year and the fact that Molitor just led this 26-game turnaround. But he's okay. A.J. Hinch is okay with that. You know, would it be better to have it after the playoffs? It might be a little fair comparison, but he's got he's going to get a ring next April that's going to more than make it for whatever heartbreak he's feeling today.
So just to show you the difficulty of voting for manager of the year, how subjective this thing could be. Joe Girardi got some down ballot love, some second and third place votes. Dusty Baker got a first place vote. Those guys, of course, get canned after the fact. And Joe Girardi, of course, famously won this award in 2006 with the Marlins and was canned that offseason. So it just goes to show there's no one true formula.
Yeah. And for instance, Dave Roberts was probably not going to win because he took the team with the most talent and finished first. And yet we all know Dave Roberts did an amazing job holding that club together. I mean, you go through a period where you're historically good, then you're historically bad, and then you right the ship. I mean, there were a lot of challenges there that his best player, Seager's on the disabled list, his best pitcher, Kershaw's on the disabled list. So it is. It's an inexact science.
I almost feel like, Richard, it would kind of be more interesting and maybe more relevant with the way the game is just managed and handled today. Obviously, front office has a lot of input in what goes on in the dugout these days. We all know that. And working in tandem is so important. You know, there's best executive is a category in the Esurance MLB awards that we have on our site. So that's certainly interesting. Maybe it'd be interesting to have the BBWA vote on best executive, maybe even in lieu of best manager, or maybe just some kind of combination like best leadership, right? Like just best group. Yeah, I mean, who had the best group? Who got the most Wiley transactions / got the most out of their roster? Just basically, that's it. Who got the absolute most out of their roster or their conditions, be it payroll or what have you? That might be a more interesting award.
Yeah, and when you think about it, the keys are ownership, the keys are the baseball ops, and the keys are the guy that makes it work in the clubhouse, and also the coaches. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. And I think the one of the things that both Lovello and Molitor said today is, hey, this award represents an organization. A ton of people behind the scenes did work to help me get this trophy. And they acknowledge that.
All right. So congrats to Tori Lovello and to Paul Molitor. And my thanks to Richard Justice and Allison Footer for joining us. This has been the Morning Lineup Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.